Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we chop it up about work and money for millennials with the hope we don't leave you saying, hey, man, I'm going to punch you in your face.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances, all words.
And if you've been enjoying the show, drop by and hit us with the 5 stars in iTunes. If you don't know how, visit paychecksandbalances.com/review. It helps us stay visible in the rankings, which means we reach more people.
And if we reach more people, we help more people.
Indeed, good sir. Indeed, we do. So we're on a roll with guests. Today, we're joined by Aja McClanahan, who I first met in Chicago after straining my vocal cords at Podcast Movement. She was speaking at a FinCon-related event. I believe it was the Road to Financial Wellness Tour. And I thought she had a really interesting story. So many of us talk about trying to leave the hood, but guess what? She went back willingly. So Aja also basically told me to hustle harder when I asked the question at the session about kind of balancing your day job with the side hustle. So she might low key be part of the reason I'm now waking up at 5 a.m. because late nights ain't really working for me anymore. So Aja, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I guess to get started, if you can tell the people a little bit about your background.
Oh my goodness. Do I start when I was born or when I was 5 years old? Or that's such a broad question. Well, I'll start with what probably makes the most sense for your listeners. I went to school, like a bunch of people, racked up a bunch of student loans, got married, racked up some more debt, and basically got into like a pretty much a financial crisis. At one point, we were over $120,000 in debt between myself and my husband. And so we kind of woke up one day and we're like, we need to fix this. This is an emergency. We need to do something right away. So we actually started the process of getting out of our debt. We read a book by, if anybody's ever heard of Dave Ramsey, he's like the debt-free guru. Read that book, got on the plan. And I'm making it sound much shorter than it really is. Got on the plan and eventually paid off all of our debt in 2013. But in between that time, we did some pretty crazy things. Like we moved in with my mom. One time she moved in with us. One time we moved to the hood to get a house with no mortgage. And actually we still live here. So we did that. So lots of fun stuff. I started a business that grew to 6 figures, threw that towards the debt. So that's pretty much it. Like we were in a bunch of debt and then we got out by doing hard stuff, not impossible stuff. And now I write at my blog, principlesofincrease.com, because I get the question so much like, how did you guys do that? So now I kind of mass mentor people through my blog.
Dope.
So I just, that book is it the Financial Money Maker or the Money Makeover? Just goes, if people are interested.
This one is called Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey. And he's had several editions. If you just like Google that or look on Amazon, probably put it in the show notes, right, guys? But if that is, people always ask me like, how did you start? What do you do? If you're totally clueless, totally lost, that is the book that will redirect you and get you on the right path.
Got it.
There it is. So taking a step back, because I was doing a little bit of reading beforehand, and your husband now, that was your junior high school sweetheart? Like that actually happens?
Oh my goodness. You really went, you really did some research. So if he were here telling the story, he'd tell you he was totally uninterested in me from the ages of like 12 to 23. And then, you know, suddenly he like figured out I was a nice person or something. But the truth of the matter is we did meet in junior high, and we were nerds. We were in some of the honors classes and stuff. And in fact, I met him in Spanish class. And so throughout junior high and high school, we had a lot of classes together. So we were pretty good friends. Like we talked on the phone, we kind of knew each other and went away for college, and then kind of reconnected after college. And that's when we started dating.
Oh, okay. Because I'm like, that is incredible for y'all to have known each other since junior high, stayed together through high school and everything else. I'm like, yo, that's the craziest thing I ever heard.
No, he wouldn't date me. I was actually pretty wild in my high school days. So he wouldn't touch me with a 10-foot pole. But we were flirty. We were cordial. We were friends. I remember we would like, you know, talk on the phone and stuff. So in my mind, we were sweethearts. In his mind, he says no, because no 12-year-old is thinking about marriage. But and I beg to differ. That's our story. And we're still together. We'll be celebrating 12 years of marriage next month.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. Yeah, I was going to ask how long you've been married at this point. So this is nice to hear that's coming up.
Yes, 12 long years. And I ask him every year, did you think we would make it? He's like, of course. What? Why do you ask me this every year?
Wait, are you asking him, did he think you would make it the next 365 days or the new year?
I mean, every year we're married, I'm so amazed because, growing up, I never had, long-term relationships. I didn't have, long-term boyfriends. The longest-term thing I had ever done was, finish high school. That was, 4 years, and I was, proud of that. College was another 4 years. So I'm like, married? How do people do this? And I mean, a lot of people, I didn't know a lot of people who had stayed married or been married, including my parents. So every year that we make it, I'm like, yes, oh my God, it's working. It's working.
Take that, statistics.
So since you're about to officially be a guru, or you're kind of already approaching guru in the marriage game, I guess we can say guru is defined by, I don't know, 10 years. So any advice for anyone that aspires to be married, is about to be married, or just got married but has no idea what the hell they're doing?
Oh my goodness, that is so deep. Okay. So, and honestly, okay. So the difference for me was, we're Christians, so we go to church. So we have a common rule book, playbook that we agree on, and that's the Bible. So that's what worked for us. I'm sure there are many other successful marriages and people that don't use that but for me, since I had never known anybody that was successfully married growing up and stuff, I had to, that's what I reverted to, and we agreed on it. So that's pretty much what's worked. So I would say have some common rules that you agree on. And I think if you can come together on that, then that's probably going to save you.
And this might be an extension of that, but on the financial side, is there anything you would share either now for young couples or the soon to be married as far as financial literacy and advice?
Oh yeah, I could talk for hours on that. Number one, definitely make sure if you're dating and you think it's going to be serious, be open and honest with each other about things like how much debt you have, how much money you make, what kind of lifestyle you want. And a lot of times you'll go to premarital counseling if you are getting married in a church or something, and they'll cover these things like, do you want kids? How do you feel about drugs? And, all this other stuff. yeah, you got to ask. Illegal street drugs. No, not this. But so they ask all these things, and I feel like sometimes that part is lacking. And I think since we've gotten married, the internets have made everyone pretty smart in that. So probably more people are doing that. But when I was getting married, it really wasn't something that was included much in the premarital counseling. So definitely find out what your potential mate's money picture is. How do they feel about money? Find out their money personality. Are they a saver? Are they a spender? And just because you're a saver and they're a spender doesn't mean you don't get married. You just, again, come up with some common rules, some rules that you can agree upon. You know, your marriage playbook, like, when this happens, we're going to have to do this. If you want to get this, a new car or whatever, at least tell me about it. Like, we've had friends that we know who, they'll be like, yeah, my wife came home with a new car today. And I'm like, what?
No. Yeah. That happens.
Oh my goodness. You guys don't believe me, but I can name many occasions where my husband would be like, yeah, I talked to so-and-so today. And he said his wife went out and got a new car.
I'm going to treat myself.
Yeah. So just know each other's money personality and create. And after you do all the fluffy, fun, TD Jake stuff, then actually put some stuff on paper. Be like, if we get married and this is our debt together, this is how much you'll make. This is how much I'll make. Once we put this on paper, will we have enough to live, or do we have to stay with your parents? Really for real, have that conversation. Cause unless you get down to the numbers, you're working off of theories and conjecture, and you're like, yeah, God is going to make a way, which I believe, praise the Lord, let the church say amen. But he also has to respect numbers and math. And that's where a lot of people miss it. So definitely get stuff on paper, talk about things before you get married, and just have a plan to go forward.
We've talked about on the show before, and I don't want to derail too much, but the premarital counseling, I think it has a unnecessarily negative connotation. So do you have any thoughts on the pros, cons of premarital?
I say do it, but I say do it the right way. So how do I say this? So I know like in church circles, people will be like, we met with our pastor and for like, we met with our pastor one time and we're getting married tomorrow, which is, you know, that could work for some people, but for us, I think it was helpful because we actually took like a 6-week class where we had to talk about like parenting styles and, you know, we talked a little bit about money and like, you know, do you like to clean? Do you don't like to clean? I told my husband from the beginning, I never like to clean, and every day he acts so surprised. But like, you know, we talked about that. And the other thing is, yes, work with your pastor, but then also you should seek out even professional credentialed people who can help you lay the groundwork for communication. You know, there are some proven theories and practices around communication that sometimes your pastor may not know if he's not trained in, you know, social work or counseling, or I'm not sure what the degree is. So I would say do both. I'm a big proponent of like, yes, doing the spiritual thing, but also do some of the practical things too. So if I were to go back and do it again, yes, I love this 6-week thing that we went through, but maybe also add some professional credentialed people in the mix too.
I'm glad you said that, because whether it comes to financial advice or different types of advice, there are people with credentials, but then there are people who aren't credentialed, but still really know their stuff. And I know a lot of the folks that we both know through the whole FinCon and financial community, there's a lot of people out there who aren't necessarily certified, and we're not certified in things. We also don't purport to be experts, but what would you recommend for people in terms of determining whether someone is legit or not? Because someone could also be certified and still not really be official. You know what I'm saying?
No, that's a good question. So I think it comes down to talking to people ahead of time and just getting a sense of who they are, and kind of maybe throwing out scenarios to say, hey, these are some of our issues. How do you think we could solve them? So kind of testing them out a little bit. And then if you like their responses, they might be the person, or if you feel like you just kind of jive with that person. But if they come like out of left field, and it is like something you just, you know, they're like, well, you know, the ancient art of whatever, you know, if they just come out of left field, but you might be someone who needs the ancient art of Eastern meditation or whatever. I'm like, if that's your thing and they throw that out there and they, you know, they throw that, you know, hook out there and you're like, yeah, I'll take it. So just find somebody, you know, who kind of melds with your style.
Got it. Now let's talk a little bit more about the debt hood story. And in my document, I put this debt/back to the hood. So I've decided to call it debt hood. I'm not sure if you've ever used that. So
I haven't. Creative though.
So you racked up over $120,000 in debt. So my question to you is, how did you get there? You weren't supposed to get there.
Yeah, make sure you stay on top of that note. But no, that was good. Good shot. I had $30,000 of debt in college. So did my husband. Then we were so smart.
Say it with pride. Say it with pride. I mean, we all have debt. There's no need to get quiet on that part.
Yes.
That's what the point of the discussion is.
I signed my life on the line, you all. Even in the exit interview, they're like, you realize you're going to have to, you know, this is when your loans are going to start. I'm just like totally oblivious. And when they had the gall to send me a bill 6 months after I graduated, I was still shocked. Like, what is going on here? So anyway, yes, I signed on the dotted line several times, took my refund check, even though I was working sometimes 20, 30, 40 hours a week. I could have paid for my college education out of pocket. I'm just keeping it real. But when I got those refund checks, I went to the mall. I went to New York. I did, you know, all that stuff. So I was not smart at all. My husband took out quite a bit of loans. He went to a private college for like a year, and his bill was $30,000. And then he had like a trade school he went to. Then we were so smart that we financed like a $30,000 SUV. And then I had the bright idea, like, I know what's going to get us out of debt. I'm actually going to go into more debt to start a business, and it'll make so much money that it'll then get us out of all this debt. And that did not work. We just went deeper into debt. So there was like credit card.
Trump system.
I'm not, no comment. Not going to get me political up in here. We're talking about paychecks and balances. But yeah, debt. you know, using debt that to finance something that I really could have run from home, really should have been very lean, low overhead. I just want to be that magical, mythical business owner, and I paid dearly for it. So that's about $120,000 worth of debt. And then like miscellaneous stuff.
Yeah. And so of course you started the business. I'm sure y'all had a lot of conversations about it. And actually, just out of curiosity, did that debt have any impact on y'all's relationships? Like, was there like frustration? Because, you know, sometimes when there's debt hanging over people's head, of course, it kind of creeps its way into the relationship in mysterious and odd ways. Did y'all have to overcome any of that?
So, again, me going back to being the powerful praying woman that I am, I prayed that we would never fight about finances. And we never had like technical, they weren't fights, but there were moments of deep, deep tension. And my husband is a pretty laid back guy. He's like, you know, I'm working, one day you'll work. I wasn't even working that much. He's like, it'll resolve itself. But I had like a growing uneasiness that it wouldn't resolve itself, that we had to be a little more proactive. So I probably just got on his nerves more, being like, help, we're in an emergency, the ship is falling, you know, SOS, you know. And so I probably put more stress and pressure and strain on him, which made him kind of be more stressed. So yes, the answer is yes, it did affect our relationship, where I probably asked him to agree to more things than he should have, like going into lots of credit card debt to start a business because of my anxiety over our growing debt. So I'm like, oh, the only way we can do this, you know, fix this, is by getting more debt. So I had to start a business and I'm going to be, you know, successful. And he's like, okay. So he did it. And, you know, in hindsight, you know, I probably should not have done that. And again, there wasn't like knockdown, you know, just all out fights. What is the word? Knock down, drag out, whatever they use to make a fight. Yeah, right. We didn't have that. But, you know, I am a very type A personality. And so I was probably just agitating him more. And it probably wasn't a comfortable situation for him. Had we stayed in debt and I stayed so high strung about the debt, honestly, I don't know if we would still be married today. So I think it's a very good thing. I see the difference in our relationship now that we're out of debt. I'm not as high strung. I don't have to pressure him about as many things. So I think we have a better like marital atmosphere, if you will, because of that.
Nice.
Yeah. He took my word. I was going to say nice too, and then I realized now I don't have a word. So I'll just go into my question. So I've seen, and I might have heard it at FinCon, honestly. I can't remember who said this, but I thought it was a great metaphor. I don't want to take credit for it, but I'm still in it. And it's like, you don't pay attention to your gas tank till it's nearly empty as far as money management goes. And so how do you stay principled? Because I see a lot of people kind of in this lane where, yeah, I paid off $100,000 and then I got $50,000 back into debt and I paid off $50,000. It's like they are responsible in waves. So how do you just get out of debt and then stay there, which it sounds like you have?
Yeah. So I feel like I'm just so debt averse, like even when opportunities come. And in fact, we actually just after all these years got like another credit card, and I'm like watching it, you know, paying down balances. And I can't even take credit for being like such a grounded, centered person. If you have been through post-traumatic debt disorder,
oh, man.
I feel like there is a trauma that we experience, or that I experienced, definitely going through debt repayment, because there were some really drastic things that we had to do. So although I like to take credit for being like so on top of things, I feel like I get twitchy and itchy, like if I even think something is debt. Like, for example, we were looking at changing our phone plan, and one of the carriers was like, yeah, you get this phone and then you'll just pay like $20 or $30 a month for it for 2 years, and that it'll be your phone, though. I'm like, no, that's debt in disguise. No. So I feel like I'm really sensitive to that. Like, even when, you know, my mom, she'll bring up like, you should really go back to school. And I'm like, no, get out, you know, like. Because I was traumatized.
you know, I bought that phone, and that was actually a very painful exercise. I'm literally just paying off my cell phone 2 years later next month. So it's like my birthday present to myself. Like, I thought my grandkids were going to have to pay this cell phone off. It seemed like such a good deal at the time. It was the new iPhone. I had to have it. The screen was bigger. And then, like, you just sign up. You're like, oh, just. And then they, like, yeah, like, you're right. They slip it on your bill. You're like, I'm just putting it on the bill. I won't even notice. It's only $20 a month. And it just haunts you for years. It's like, I basically bought a car that was a phone.
Yeah, that's seriously a trigger for me. And I don't know if you'll edit this out or you'll go back and ask them to sponsor the podcast. But I went on, I don't know if you heard of Swappa. Like, I went on there and got an iPhone. It was, I mean, it wasn't super cheap, but it wasn't like whatever they want you to pay for 5 years. I did that, $30 a month, you know, Metro PCS, and we're good.
It's called Swappa?
Yeah, SWAPPA.com.
I was going to say, that sounds like a rapper, but.
No. No, and the nice thing about it, again, I don't know if you're going to keep this footage, but they check everything. Because if you just like try to go on Craigslist and get a phone, people be like, yeah, here's this fake ESN. There's all kinds of scams and stuff, but they won't let someone list the phone unless everything is clear. So I had a great experience with them. So that's the long story of how, you know, like things like that are a trigger. Like if I hear phone contract, I'm shutting down. Got to be in the house for 3 days, eating Ben and Jerry's. Like, I just can't go back there.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. And we will hashtag leave that in because it's valuable. And we don't want to deny people things that may help them, because there's probably someone who's like struggling with making that decision about to get that phone, where to get that phone. And if we can save them in the moment, let's do that. Now the whole thing about moving back into the hood, I know we kind of glossed over it a bit, but I do want to talk about that because it's so different from what you hear the average person say. You really hear people talk about getting out of the hood and moving away from where they grew up because of what that represents to them, you know, mentally or where they stand in life. So was that an easy decision for y'all to make? And then on top of that, did you have people who tried to make you feel like you guys were taking a step back by making that decision?
Oh my goodness. That's an understatement. My parents, especially, we were both raised in the suburbs of Chicago. So south suburbs. And, yeah, so we had some interaction with the city. We had relatives to live there. You know, we would kind of go in and out. It was like that forbidden place. Like, don't be going to the city, you all. But I had gone there in my 20s to teach high school for a year as a favor, you know, for somebody. Mm-hmm. So I taught in Inglewood, where I live now. That's the place that Spike Lee made famous in his movie Chirac. So that's where I live now. That's where I taught in my 20s. And my grandmother lived here as well. So just to kind of break down what happened with the story, my husband and I got to a place where we were like, again, so traumatized by debt. We were like, hey, babe, if we never, you know, get a house because we need a mortgage, I'm okay with that. You know, like, well, I think our plan was more like, let's get a house, but let's not get a mortgage. And we were like, if we're like 60 years old getting a house, fine, whatever. So we agreed that we never wanted a mortgage. So this opportunity came up. A relative of ours had inherited a house. And they lived in the suburbs too, like us. And they're like, I'm not going to use this. My kids are in high school. I can't move to the city. Do you want it? And I was like, no, I'm not moving to Chirac, or, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm not moving from Homewood to Inglewood. Cause we were living at Homewood at the time with my mom.
I thought that was just like your reference for home. I didn't realize Homewood was actually like a place.
Yeah, it's a place. Yeah. It's a nice, it's one of the nicer, South Chicago suburbs. So, I was like, no, flat out no. And then I told my husband, like, guess what somebody asked me today? You'll never believe this is so stupid and crazy. And I told him, he's like, well, we did say we wanted a house with no debt, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, but that's not it. That's not it. You know, you know. And so we actually thought, like, we couldn't get off our minds after a couple of weeks. We accepted. We were like, yeah, let's do this. So the other part of the story is at that time we had been paying down our debt and saving money. So we were kind of the only one in the relative circle that had the cash reserves to even do like the renovation and the rehab. And we did it cash. We weren't going to go into debt. We were not going to take out a loan or anything. We cash flowed the whole thing. It took us a year to fix everything up and get in here. Mm. But we took it. And, you know, my parents are like, why are you, I raised you to be a nice suburban kid. I, you know, like they act like they spent their whole life to make sure we would never have to go back into the ghetto, which I appreciate. But you all, you know, the ghetto is not necessarily a place. It's a mindset, you know. So they were, you know, they were like, we had shielded you from this. Our whole life was dedicated to make sure you would always be a nice suburban, successful, blah, blah, blah. But on the other hand, I'm like, you know, we're broke. We can't afford anything else. Like, we could have, if we really wanted to, we could have moved to another suburb and got a house for like $400,000. We could have done that. But again, I do not think, yeah, we would have got a mortgage. I would have never seen my kids. I've never seen my husband. I don't think I would be married today if we chose that route. And we were really close to that because we lived in another nice suburb and we saw all these nice houses around us. And that's what I wanted. I was like, I want this. And I'm so glad we didn't get it because people were stressed. And I'm not that tolerant of levels of stress like that. So, yeah, we moved in. People are like, you live in the, you know, in the hood and this and that. But I'm going to tell you again, back to praying. And, you know, I am a praying Christian lady. We began to pray for the neighborhood. We've seen liquor stores close down. We got a Whole Foods.
That's usually a sign.
Oh, yo, y'all made it.
Well, let me just say this. Let me just also say this. This is not gentrification. It's about two white people that live here. So it's
that's
not,
what I was going to. I was debating not, if I asked you that because that was my next thought.
No, it's
that
not.
Starts.
No, it, you know, this is a miracle from the master because there are some factors that have to be in place for gentrification. And Chicago is actually losing people at a very rapid pace because of the taxes and the this and this and that. So this is not gentrification. This is something else. I want to say that it is prayer. I mean, we came in, we plugged into our community, we got involved, we began to advocate, get involved, you know, do things at the grassroots level. And so I think, you know, not to go all deep and stuff, like we made a conscious decision, like if we're going to be here, like the financial situation drew us in, but our love and our heart for the community and other people like of color, like us who are suffering, that kept us here and has kept us involved and active. So it actually turned out to be one of the best things I think we could have ever done. Today, actually, we had our 5K. Like 3 years ago, someone started up a 5K, and I just ran it. So these are things that are like unheard of, like happening in this neighborhood. If you look up Inglewood on the internet, you'll see all this crazy stuff. Everything they say that happens, but you know, good things are now starting to happen, and it's not just because of me, but there are more people that are coming in and realizing that, like you say, you just can't get yours and be out. You know, this is not what people fought for. It's like you get yours and then you got to give back. Everybody's not called to move back, but maybe you can support somebody who is.
Yeah, definitely, man. And I'm sitting here and I actually got a little bit of goosebumps from hearing that because I'm serious because I'm like, yo, that's so dope. Because you hear about people moving back or moving in, and once an area is in bad shape, you usually hear about that area continuing to get worse unless it gets gentrified. And that hasn't happened, which feels like a rarity. I mean, I can't think of too many other places where like a Whole Foods pops up. And that doesn't mean that black people are then going to be on the out or whoever else is in that community is going to be on the out. So that's like, that's dope to me to be able to hear that.
Yeah, I'd love if more people would maybe think about this. And
if you're like me, you probably hate grocery shopping. And if you're like me, you probably hate figuring out dinner every night. And that's where HelloFresh comes into play. So HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novice chefs like myself to seasoned home cooks. And one of the best things about this is if you're cooking just for yourself, each meal could last you 2 days. I discovered that when I was making this sizzling beef stir fry last week. I promise you, it really was sizzling. And if you're wondering how the food gets delivered, it arrives at your doorstep in a special insulated box for free, 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 free. So for $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks. Again, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks when you subscribe. Check it out.
And just to add to that, it's been great for the community, but it's been great for us as a family. Like, I get to homeschool my kids. Both of my kids have careers in acting and entertainment. I can tote them to and from auditions. They make money wow. with voiceover work. They've been on TV. If I had a mortgage and had to work 24 hours a day, basically, I wouldn't be able to do things like that. I wouldn't be able to homeschool them. And not only do we homeschool them, we also do what's called road schooling. So we do homeschooling on the road. This summer, we studied sustainability. So our kids came to San Diego with us. They went to SeaWorld, the San Diego Zoo. So they got to see, you know, learn like up close and personal, like about ecosystems and things like that. So they get to travel with us. Earlier this year, we went to Dominican Republic because they're learning Spanish. We did some plant studies there. Last year, we did like 6 weeks in California. We also went to Memphis to see the National Civil Rights Museum, just so, you know, our kids could be like rooted and grounded and like know their history. And so like those are some of the things we get to do because we live in the quote unquote hood. Like, we have a really high quality of life here.
So you mentioned the kids and these experiences that they're getting to have that a lot of other kids probably don't get to have. So how are you teaching them about money?
I yell at them mostly. No. well, they do make their own money. So they get paychecks and everything. So when they get their money in, we divvy up their checks. So they have like 10% that goes to church and charity, and then they get to spend 10%. And it's only 10% because they don't really have any expenses around the house. And the other thing is sometimes their checks are, and I'm not like saying this to brag or anything, but sometimes they get enough money where I'm like, I'm not going to give you, you know, $300. You know, you just don't need, as a 7-year-old, you don't need $300. You know, like sometimes their checks are bigger. So I just give them 10% right now. And then they actually have to use that money, that 10%, like they're responsible for buying their snacks. So we'll go to Aldi. They'll get their money and they have to like figure out what's on sale, do like a budget and make sure that they stay within their budget when they go get their snacks. So I'm like adding more responsibility for them. So like if we go out to eat, they cover their own food. If we go to McDonald's, which we don't, you know, some other fast food. I mean, we do fast food, but at McDonald's. Yeah, if we go out to eat, they are paying, they're fronting the bill. And then on top of that, the remainder goes up into like their brokerage account. So we like study companies, we look at their financial statements, we look at their PE ratios and all that stuff to see if it's like a stock they want to buy. So they actually learn how to invest as well with their money.
They're being set up so proper. And because these are a lot of the conversations that a lot of us didn't have when we were younger, like, you know,
right. Yep.
I think, you know, I'm not going to say that I had bad parents because I certainly did not, but we didn't have these types of conversations about money, talking about stock, you know, talking about only taking 10%. I was waiting for you to say, I take out 40% for rent, even though they're not paying it.
Oh, we're getting there one day.
Yeah. I definitely want to, I guess it doesn't even have to be said, but that is amazing, wonderful, and a bunch of other accolades that I can't think of right now because I don't have my thesaurus in front of me. But my folks, I mean, that's the thing. And I think Rich and I have talked about this before. My folks were great with money. My folks are actually surprisingly good with money. They got investments all over the place. But as far as even the idea of talking about money was just like frowned upon in the house. And I told this story before, but I didn't even know how much my parents made. Like, I assumed we were broke because they always told me. My dad's favorite story was for Christmas, he got an apple. And the only thing he asked his dad was, is this all for me? So I thought we were poor, like dirt broke, which it didn't make any sense to me because, like, yeah, we lived in the suburbs, but they just kept telling, oh, man, we ain't got no money. We can't do that. Oh, what? You want that? Well, you can go half on it. So then I'm filling out my FAFSA one day, and yeah, I didn't talk to my parents for many, many, many months. Like, it was like literally a breaking point because it was so frowned upon to talk about money. I'm like, man, y'all lied to me. So I'm like, I'm out.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. So we're wrapping up or moving toward the end of the show here. So you have the perspective as a financial educator, businesswoman, wife, mother, auntie, cousin, friend, and all of these other things that contribute to your dopeness. What's been the most surprising thing to you about this journey that you've been on?
Oh, my goodness. Number one, there were times where I really didn't think I could do it because in my mind, I'm like, I've never been good with money. I've always been a natural. I just like to spend. I would going shopping was a part of my coping mechanism for life. So I'm just like, there's no way, you know, that we could do this. And then, you know, we did it. So that was surprising. And then number two, I guess I didn't realize how important teamwork would be in this whole process. Like, my husband has been such a champ. Like, I can't even say some of the sacrifices that he has made to make this happen. Like, if it, number one, it was mostly his income. And number two, like, just making some of those concessions. I remember one summer we were here and someone had vandalized our AC. And they probably got about $10 for the copper they stole, but it broke down our whole AC unit. We were getting quotes of like $3,000 and $4,000 to replace it. And it was one of the hottest summers that Chicago had in like 50 years, something like that.
Wow.
And my husband is the mailman. He's a letter carrier. So he spends his day outside and he's one of those people is like, when I get home, that air bet be on, you know, he's like, don't play with me. And that summer we were faced with the decision, like, do we get it fixed or do we finish paying off debt? And my baby, he was like, come on, let's take this home. Let's bring this home. So we didn't get it fixed. We went that summer, one of the hottest summers, without AC so that we could pay off our bills. And like that just, I mean, he was already my hero, but just like doing that for his family, you know, I was like, man, I didn't know he was going to come through like that. So like now I like have to buy him a Bentley or something like when we become a millionaire. So that's the only thing. I am forever indebted to him, but it really worked out, and I'm so glad that like the teamwork kicked in and we got it done.
Yo, can y'all send me like an autographed family photo, like hashtag life goals, so I can put that up on the wall, because it's incredible.
Oh, you guys are so nice. Now, I'm not saying everything is perfect. Yes, my kids, they learn about stocks, but they're whining and complaining and falling on the floor. It's not perfect. It's work. You know, they're just not like, okay, mother, thank you for our 10% of our earnings. We love you. It takes work, you know, and there's pushback and you're dealing with other personalities in the family. But I'm really thankful that, you know, we have gotten through it. And I just want to encourage anyone else out there who's listening, like if you want this for yourself and for your life, just know, especially if you have a family, like it is going to take teamwork. And sometimes part of the team will break down. Some people will be stronger than others at different moments, but just press through and, you know, you guys can get it done.
That reminds me, I think my mother listens to the show now. So I want to say, Mom, I love you. You were right and I was wrong as the budget conversation. I just wish I had known earlier. So thank you. I need to get that disclaimer out of the way. Or it'll be a very long Thanksgiving for me.
Right.
Yeah. So Aja, it's been so awesome having you on the show. So of course we want people to know where to find you. But are there any other tools or projects you're working on that you want to share with people right now before we wrap up?
You know what? Right now, I'm just going to direct you to my website because I always have lots of stuff going on and I usually email people about it. So if you're interested, come to my website. I'm at principlesofincrease.com. But if you catch me on Twitter, my handle is Increase Laws with an S. So check me out, see what I'm doing, and, you know, shoot me a message and let me know if I can help you.
The fact you had to say with an S is funny to me because some people would actually put a Z there.
Maybe I should change it. That's like hipper.
No. Well, I mean, you made it work. So again, it's been awesome having you on. And thanks to everyone for listening to this episode. We hope you got something from it. If you have topics you'd like to hear us cover on a future show, you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com.
And of course, now we have to plug our email list where we share top articles we read throughout the week, work and money tips, and much more. Sign up by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email.
There it is. So again, thanks for listening. Thanks to a great guest. And until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.